to get to this point when it comes to politics requires a significant amount of discussion and negotiations behind closed doors. Those are never easy. Now, the man who is front and center when it comes to having that conversation is former Vancouver Mayor Kennedy Stewart. He is coming out with a new book called Decrim, How We Decriminalized Drugs in British Columbia. He talks about what's happening behind the scenes and also the broader conversation of why British Columbia is headed in this direction. The book, to my understanding, is coming out in May, but this is very important today, and it was important to have him on the show as well. He joins us now. Today, he is the director of the Center for Public Policy Research at Simon Fraser University. Kennedy, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, great to be here, Jess. Thanks for having me.
So what's today mean to you? I mean, you were negotiating behind the scenes. You've been a mayor, of course. What's this day mean to you?
Well, it depends what hat I'm wearing. You know, first and foremost, as someone who's lost a family member to toxic drugs, it means a lot to our family that death has a meaning, that there's some meaning behind it. And so that, and I think many families across British Columbia, too many, are feeling the same way, is that any kind of change is important. As a policy maker, as a former mayor and MP, this is important. I think that shows that Canada's heading in a different direction when it comes to moving away from the war on drugs and moving more to a much more health-centered approach. And then finally, as a public policy professor, I think that this shows, you know, presents an opportunity to show how these policies can be changed in the future.
Mm-hmm. Now, some have said, look, they've tried this in Oregon or in the midst of that conversation. Many people talk about the Portugal model. There have been critics of both models as well, that it hasn't done what many felt it was going to do. And it hasn't been as successful as some people have said it is, particularly around the Portugal model, that these successes are not black and white. What makes you think we can succeed here in British Columbia?
Yeah, well, for me, it's, I guess, is what you think success is. So, you know, the overall thing that we're all looking for is reduction in toxic drug overdoses and, of course, death, which is really the most grim statistic that any kind of policymakers can deal with. But there's a number of kind of sub indicators. For example, one that's not talked about as much is the seizures of drugs. So, so we know from the police, and I'm sure Deputy Chief Fiona Wilson told you this, that there's not that many arrests in Vancouver, at least.
Mm-hmm.
There are more across the province and other jurisdictions, so that'll make a difference province-wide. But what there are a lot of is drug seizures. And so if you're caught with small amounts of drugs, one of our students actually at the School of Public Policy did her master's on this, was that half of the seizures of drugs, which there are a lot, thousands, are actually under this threshold. So police are still seizing small quantities of drugs from folks that are caught with them. And this is like, to me, it's kind of like, you know, you meet some teenagers on the beach and you pour out their alcohol and let them go on their way. This is kind of what police are doing on a very regular basis right across the province, running into folks that have small quantities of drugs, taking them away, and then letting them go on their way. Unfortunately, what happens in those cases is a lot of those folks that are very dependent are forced into very risky behaviors to try to secure the drugs that they need to function. So that's where I think the biggest difference will be through this policy.
You talked about the negotiations that go on behind closed doors, raising the profile of this issue. Walk me through what that was like when you first brought this issue up in the corridors of power, not just here in BC, but more importantly in Ottawa, because this is ultimately a federal law. This is a pilot project, but it's a federal law. Walk me through some of the skepticism or perhaps questions you dealt with behind the scenes.
Sure. Sure. So elected in late 2018, but in 2019, we were actually seeing quite a drop in the number of deaths due to toxic drugs. And so a lot of the focus at that point was safe supply. So I remember being on a panel with Dr. Bonnie Henry and talking to, Dr. Patricia Daly and all the health advisors in British Columbia. And in 2019, the whole focus was on getting safe supply programs up off of the ground. But after the pandemic hit, that changed things radically. The drug supply changed very significantly, and we've had a massive spike in deaths. And so, so that's when all policy options kind of came on the table for some of us. And the Prime Minister told me twice to my face in 2019 that he was never going to decriminalize drugs. The Premier was Premier Horgan at that point was reluctant, mm-hmm. But it took the work of activists really to really drive this to the federal level, and in the end convinced us at the city to make an application for an exemption at the citywide level. Then the province quickly followed with their province-wide exemption application, which was takes effect today. Mm-hmm. So it was a long and winding road to get here, and I think that's a really important story to understand for folks who want to move further in this direction or do any policy change, is that how much work it takes. You know, lots of people saying, you know, this isn't going to solve things and it's not that big a change, but how much political work it takes to get something like this done is worth understanding.
Some have said that, look, we're a G7 nation with a strong social safety net in the grand scheme of things, and it's odd for British Columbia and Canada to take sort of this libertarian hands-off approach, and that we should still be we should instead be focusing on more beds, first of all, for treatment. We're at about 3,200, I think, in this province. 320 have been added since the NDP were elected in 2017. More needed, but look, focus on those treatment beds. Focus on issues around housing, employment, and health care. That's where our focus should be, not on decriminalizing these drugs, even for personal use. What do you say to that argument?
I agree with a lot of it. I do think that treatment, I mean, while I was mayor, we approved the biggest drug treatment center in British Columbia, which is going on Clark Drive. So that has been approved, and the province will be constructing that soon. So I absolutely agree, and, you know, I've had many friends who have gone through treatment, so that's definitely important. But what we have to realize is that 80% of very hard drug users, like heroin and cocaine and increasingly other opioids, relapse. About 80% of them relapse. And so treatment is going to work for a small proportion of people, you know, and I guess the dream is that you get off drugs forever and you're always clean. But in many, many cases, that's not the effect, and people are on and off drugs for their entire lives. And so we need a kind of real everything we can have. Excuse me. So decriminalization is important. Treatment's important. Safe supply is probably the most important thing we can move out, that people get off of these poison drugs and you know, live their lives in a much more predictable way. But of course, housing and all those jobs and everything else are all important, because at the root of all this is often trauma. And trauma comes from many, many places. But one thing we always have to be conscious of is, of course, we've recently nationally declared that we have committed genocide here in Canada. And a lot of the trauma, that resulting trauma, does end up, unfortunately, leading to, you know, substance abuse, substance use, and a lot of that is poison drugs. So this is, you know, affecting Indigenous people more than anybody else, and that needs to be factored into.
My final question to you, people have some pointed to Oregon as a place that has decriminalized hard drugs. Portugal, often people talk about the Portugal model, and there are a lot of folks who point to it and say, look, there's lots of success there. Others have said, look, there has been some success, certainly, but they've also implemented other things beyond just decriminalization, which is, you know, guaranteed minimum income, housing assistance, all those wraparound services that we often talk about. First of all, do you believe those two particular jurisdictions have been successful at it? And if we do what they do, would you view it as a success, or do you think we need to do more? Because if it's just those two jurisdictions, many people have said they have not been complete successes, and we're kind of flying blind here a little bit with this experiment.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all success is going to be to a degree. It's never going to be, you know, you're in the fix that you're in now with just really a huge number of people dying unnecessarily, and to a point where you're at zero and nobody's using drugs anymore. You're going to have some middle ground. So for me, the number one metric that will show success initially is that the number of people dying decreases significantly. to a point where it was, you know, in the 1980s, we would have, you know, very, very low levels of overdose. And now, since that point, it is just, you know, 10, 20, 30 times that level. So I think that's what all health policy analysts are looking at, is how do we not just keep people alive, but make sure they have better lives. So that's really what really the measure should be. Although that, you know, again, when we talk about statistics and outcomes, it's a pretty cold way of looking at individual people who are really having very, very tough lives and at risk of death daily. So we always have to keep in mind the individuals that are living this, and it's a pretty brutal life in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Kennedy, thank you for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment, going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains, made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.